he prompted. Not the most incisive question, but questions were in it. Sharon was on a roll. Nothing like wine for lubricating the words so they tumble out faster. Dirac set his two ratios equal and solved for G, the gravitational constant. But his theory of slowly evaporating gravity was eventually ruled out by experiment. So, you solved his equation for C, Tom guessed. She nodded. And C is a function of the inverse cube root of time, which gives a decreasing speed of light, he finished. But the asymptote is zero, not Einstein's constant, n'est-ce pas? Sharon wiggled her hand. I haven't worked it all out yet, but the coefficient involves the rest masses of the electron and proton. Which means the coefficient isn't constant either. Lorentz Fitzgerald contraction. If C is decreasing, what happens to mass? Beats me. Come on, this is grade school stuff. As velocity increases towards C, mass increases. Everybody knows that. So, switch frames. What's the difference if C decreases toward velocity?
None, I suppose.
Right! So, the universe is becoming more massive.
Tom patted his stomach. I thought it was your cooking. Sharon gave him the look, but he grinned until finally she had to grin, too.
Okay, I'll connect your dots.
She pushed her dinner plate to one side and leaned forward with her arms on the table.
Velocity is distance over time, right? High school physics.
They taught it just after the Lawrence Fitzgerald stuff.
Don't be cute.
Can't help it.
Well, the universe is expanding.
He almost patted his stomach again, but caught himself in time.
Big Bang. The universe started as a little ball and exploded, right? And has been expanding ever since.
No, that's wrong. That's newspaper science. The block exploded. The block exploded. What did it explode into, for crying out loud? You're thinking of stars and galaxies being flung out into space, but the block was space. Galaxies are racing away from each other, not from a common center. They aren't flying further out into space. Space is expanding between them. The cosmological fluid. Get it?
A part of her, that part able to stand outside herself, could see that she had maybe drunk too much of the wine. She was babbling, and she wished she could stop, but she was goddamn freaking happy and didn't want to. Tom shook his head. Cosmological fluid? He had a sudden Aristotelian vision of the universe as a plenum rather than empty space. Sharon pressed him, eager that he should understand, for she wanted to share her joy.
Look, imagine galaxies as dots painted on the outside of a balloon. He slapped the table in triumph. I knew we'd get to the balloon eventually. Picture yourself as a little flat bug somewhere on the balloon. That should be easy. Now, inflate the balloon. What happens to all the dots?
Tom looked up at the lamp that hung over the dining table and tugged at his lip.
Can I see around the curve of the balloon?
She nodded.
Yes, but it's curved flatland, and you can't see up or down into the balloon.
Tom closed his eyes.
Oh, all the dots are racing away from me, he decided. And the dots that are farthest away?
He opened his eyes and looked at her with a grin.
They're receding the fastest. Son of a bitch! So that's why astronomers use redshift velocity to estimate distance. Now, plunk yourself down somewhere else on the balloon. What do you see now?
He shrugged. See Milatque, obviously. She picked up the little pepper mill from the table and set it between them. She pointed at it.
So how can the same galaxy be receding from point A, she touched herself, and from point B,
she pointed to him. Tom squinted at the surrogate galaxy.
We're living on the surface of a balloon, hein? Space is expanding between us, so each of us sees the other as drifting farther away.
He was more right than he knew.
The three-dimensional surface of a very weird balloon. I call it the perceived universe. And your polyverse includes the inside of the balloon. Right! Quantum dimensions, they're called. They're literally inside the perceived universe.
I've been studying the orthogonality under Janet Poor's hypothesis.
And the speed of light?
Right.
She set the salt cellar next to the pepper mill.
Mark off a kilometer on the surface of the balloon.
Light will take, maybe a third of a microsecond to cross it.
The kilometer fixed on the balloon's surface
and a kilometer stick inside the balloon are the same.
Blow up the balloon and what happens?
The distance on the balloon gets longer, but the distance inside doesn't? And if light speed is constant in the polyverse, how far does the light get in a third of a microsecond?
As far as the original kilometer. Which falls short of your kilometer mark.
Right! So a beam of light takes longer to cover the same distance than it did before.
Tom pulled on his lower lip and studied the lamp again.
Cute, he said.
She leaned farther across the table.
It gets cuter.
How?
I can only account for half the estimated decrease in light speed.
He looked at her and blinked. Where'd the other half go?
She grinned. Distance over time, lover. What if seconds were getting shorter? A constant beam of light would cover fewer kilometers in the same number of seconds. So that stuff about rods and clocks, they're not privileged, not outside the universe. When I couple the expansion of space with the contraction of time and extrapolate backward to the Big Bang, the Big Clap, I get infinitely long second and infinitely fast light speed at the decoupling. And thus, well, it's interesting because of Milne's kinematic theory of relativity. Experimentally, you can't tell Milne from Einstein, till now.
Here's me. This time she did toast herself, draining the last of her wine. When she upended the bottle over her glass to refill it, she found that it was empty. Tom shook his head. I always thought the years went faster as I got older. Sharon woke up with a headache and a warm, fuzzy feeling. She wanted to lie in bed. She liked the feel of Tom's arm across her. It made her feel safe. But the headache won. She slipped out from under him, not that anything short of Krakatoa would wake him, and tiptoed to the bathroom, where she shook two aspirin into her palm. Newton, she said to the tablets. She rattled them like dice as she studied her reflection. What are you smiling about? She was a woman who put great store in her dignity, and she had behaved the night before in a decidedly undignified manner. You know what you're like when you drink too much, she scolded her image.
Of course you know, her image smirked. That's why you did it.
Nonsense, you've got the causal arrows backward. I wanted to celebrate my discovery. What happened afterward was spin-off.
Yeah, right.
She swallowed the aspirin, washed them down. Then, because she was already up, she went to the living room and began gathering her clothes. The dishes in the dining alcove reproached her for the food hardened upon them. Now she remembered why she didn't cook more often. She hated disorder. She'd spend all day cleaning now instead of doing physics. Newton. Now why on earth was Sir Isaac on her mind? He was passé, the old clockwork physics. Einstein had made him a special case, just as she would make Einstein a special case. But Newton had said that a change in velocity requires a force to explain it. So, if time were accelerating... She straightened abruptly, scattering all her clothes.
Why, what a very peculiar place this universe is.
9. October 1348, the Freiburg Markets. During the 2 weeks that followed Hans's terrifying revelation, Dietrich again avoided the Kränkisch encampment, nor did Hans call him over the far speaker, so at times he could almost forget that the beasts were there. He tried even to dissuade Hilda from visiting them, but the woman, taking by now an unseemly pride in her ministry, refused.
Their alchemist desires I bring more diverse foods, to find those more to their taste. Besides, they are mortal beings, however repulsive.
Mortal, yes. But wolves and bears were mortal, and one did not approach them lightly. He did not think Max could protect her should the Kränken turn and bite. Yet the Kränken spoke and devised clever tools, so they clearly owned an intellect. Could there be a soul with intellect but no will? These questions perplexed him.
and he wrote an inquiry for Gregor to take to the Archdeacon in Freiburg.